to Greg, and we've stayed in touch over the years and talked about many things, and Greg has often encouraged me to be more outrageous than I would otherwise naturally be, which is always fun. It's sort of interesting at the time, 25 years ago, that although algorithmic information theory was already, 20 years or so old, it was almost unknown at the time. And it's been really a pleasure to see in the years since then that there's been kind of every year progressively more awareness of algorithmic information theory, algorithmic complexity, and so on. And it's, I don't know what it is about the world, because I don't think that I think it's just that ideas like this take a certain number of decades to take hold, and that's been successfully happening, and that's nice to see. Well, I didn't get to talk this morning actually about the thing that I wrote, albeit rather too quickly, for Greg's volume. I named it rather enthusiastically Modern Perspectives on the Quest for Ultimate Knowledge. But what I was kind of interested in was to assess what had become of what Leibniz thought about, and how it relates to kind of what we now know. I'm not going to talk about that right now. I'm just going to say actually, I'm going to say one thing about Leibniz, which is that I was. It's a funny thing that Leibniz, for all of his work, I mean, Leibniz was, by trade, kind of a diplomacy support consultant, who was told to, go off and figure out why some particular diplomatic thing how you could justify, marrying some particular person or something based on the sort of logical theory of the history of the world and theology and so on. But he was involved in lots of kinds of things like that, as well as being a builder of practical calculating machines. He was also he set himself up as the kind of world's first mathematical standards committee, trying to sort of standardize mathematical notation and things like that. But surprisingly little that Leibniz did has sort of become, I think, prominently known until perhaps very recently in the world. And Leibniz, I'm told, maybe this is an apocryphal claim, Leibniz wrote about 1 million pages of notes in his life, which have been preserved. And at least when I was working at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, there was a rumor that was circulating that Gödel had believed that Leibniz had discovered something really significant in these 1 million pages of notes, but somehow it had been suppressed by the world in the intervening years. And Gödel thought that this was one of the things which should support his kind of somewhat paranoid view of the world in general. But anyway, in thinking about sort of what the legacy of Leibniz really has been, one of the things that I've noticed quite often is one very peculiar legacy, which I'll illustrate with this. So if you go into a typical high-quality grocery store, you will find that there is one Leibniz, one thing that still survives from Leibniz. It's these things. They say on them, Choco Leibniz. They're Leibniz cookies. And these really are connected to Leibniz. And even though there are not many sort of well-known results in mathematics or anything, there is Leibniz has a cookie named after him. They come from Hanover, and they really are Leibniz's thing. Okay. Well, one of the things that I wanted to do to kind of help us celebrate Greg's birthday here was to show sort of where we've come. This is something that Greg has on his website, and it's a medal that Leibniz had created. I don't think it was ever actually finally struck in metal, but it's a medal that he created to celebrate his most significant as well. What he thought at the time was a significant discovery. It's a medal that is about the idea of binary, which was an idea that seems to have been sort of somewhat suggested by the I Ching and Eastern kinds of things, but which Leibniz sort of locked into how it really worked, and then sort of confirmed with the missionaries in China that yes, this really was related to the I Ching and the sort of sequence of lines that you see there. Anyway, so this medal has shows binary numbers and has a little star next to the powers of two and so on. And it has a it has an inscription in the international language of the time, which of course was Latin. And the subscription inscription reads, "Omnibus ex nihilo ducendis sufficit uno." So I don't know how many Latin speakers there are. It's one of the things that when I was a kid growing up in England, I went to sort of a fine British school, and so I learned Latin for 8 years, which means that I more or less can translate classical Latin, but anything that was kind of more modern than classical times, I'm not very good on. But I think what this means is everything can be descended can be derived from nothing. One suffices. So in other words, any, you know, and it says, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. If you have any number, anything can be derived from zero just by using the digit one. And that's kind of a sort of summary of the idea of binary and something that Leibniz thought was significant. So, okay. So we thought, what better way to celebrate Greg's birthday than to try to come up with a similar kind of object for Greg. So one of the problems is that Greg's greatest accomplishments have to do with things that are non-computable. And, you know, in the NKS book, for example, I spend a lot of effort to have these kind of explicit pictures that show how things that can be made by computation. And so we struggled quite a bit to try and see whether we could actually come up with a way to represent the non-computable in a computable way. And we realized after a while that there was sort of a theorem that this was impossible. So anyway, we worked on this for a bit, and here's what we came up with. So there were a number of challenges here. The key, of course, is omega, and the digits here are from Christian Gulde and others. Computation of the first few digits of omega. We really wanted to find an absolutely invariant representation of omega, but again, the theorems are against us, so to speak. So, those are the actual those are the sequence of Turing machines that showing sort of the histories of the Turing machines and which ones don't halt and so on, which is how the digits of omega are created. So then the other problem was to create a succinct summary of the whole sort of omega and Greg concept and to cast it into an appropriate Leibnizian form. So fortunately, I'm certainly, my Latin composition skills are not up to this, but fortunately I have a friend from high school who's now a classics professor in Oxford named Armand Danger, who has made quite a career out of creating Latin and Greek statements of things. He created an ode that's used at the Olympics now that was in a Greek ode in the style of Pindar. That's one of his accomplishments. Somebody in the world has to do this, and he's kind of leading. Some email was exchanged, and the first thing he pointed out was that he said, you know, I sent him the image of Leibniz's piece. And the first thing he said was, "Oh, you don't just want me to translate something into Latin, you want a hexameter." Which, okay, what? Gosh, people. Classical education has really decayed. My God. It has to scan correctly, yes. There are 6 feet in the, I don't know whether I can tell you, but it's omnibus, etc. If you scan it, there are long and short vowels, and this is a characteristic hexameter form. So okay, so we I was told that we needed a hexameter, and what were we trying to say here? So that first thing at the top. Means everything. It's actually very complicated Latin here. I think that comes with what Leibniz had to say in Latin was simpler than what Greg needs to say in Latin, so to speak. But it essentially means everything can be summarized in one thing, but the thing itself cannot be reached. So it's kind of everything can be sort of summarized in this in Greg's omega number, but the number itself cannot be reached. Well, then my friend Armand said, actually, the way these things are really done, you don't just want a single hexameter, you need what's called an elegiac couplet. That was apparently the form that was used for the best of the Roman emperors and so on. So he very excitedly sent me mail a little while later saying he found, so in an elegiac couplet there's a hexameter first and then there's a pentameter. So he was very excited to send me mail that he found a pentameter which went with it. And so the second piece there means essentially the truths of mathematics come out as fortuitous. Okay, so there's our thing. Now of course this is just a picture. What makes it more interesting is trying to actually get what Leibniz didn't manage to do, which is actually get the thing cast out of a piece of metal. Okay? So how do you actually do that? Okay?
We don't know.
How do you do that, especially when you don't come up with the right design until
we didn't, by the way, I should say that the with the cake somewhere, there are some napkins that commemorate that. I don't know where they are.
They're on the tables.
Oh, they're on the tables. Okay, so everybody's all right. Good. Commemorate the this. But I have to say that we've kind of got halfway to where Leibniz was trying to go, and we in those few weeks we may get all the way. But so what we did was, in modern times, given any form, you can have it turned into reality. Using stereolithography, using 3D printing. Thanks to our friends at Z-Corp, which is one of the companies that makes 3D printers, we were able a couple of days ago to actually get this actual object made. There's a metal version of it on its way. And this one I'm told is somewhat fragile, but this is our gift to Greg here to commemorate Omega and it says at the bottom sort of commemorating the works of. Well, that's Greg in Latin. If you look back at the other one, that one has a date. You know, we were really just doing the classical thing and copying what's there. That date was 1697. This date is 2007. So, well. it's important.